and welcome to another episode of the Burt's Books podcast. Today, I'm joined by the lovely Michael.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Lovely.
Well, all right.
It's a new one for you, but I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I think I got distracted.
Yes.
Because we've got somebody else here.
Yes.
We've got the lovely Sally.
Ah, thank
hello,
you
Hello, Sally,
much.
Lovely
hello,
Sally.
Hello, Burt. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
So there's three of us today.
Yes.
Because we're going to be talking about... Well, I wanted to talk about And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie. Don't know if you've heard of her review.
Oh, vaguely. Michael's mentioned her once.
I know.
You've read one or two of her books.
Yes.
So, well, I was going to talk to Sally about And Then There Were None, because Sally's recently read it.
She has.
I've recently read it.
Yes.
Because it won the Agatha Christie World Cup of Christie that we did.
Quite right, too.
And, but you wanted to talk about it as well. I don't know why.
You can't direct the Christie podcast episode without me being here as well, butting in.
I mean, we could.
You could, and I'd be really annoyed.
Well, I think you're going to be really annoyed anyway, because, we'll discuss that coming up. But we've also got, in this episode, we're going to talk about And Then There Were None, and then, after that, I am going to talk about The Great Godden with Nikki, who was here a few weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
So she's going to talk about The Great Godden, which was one of our LGBT book club picks.
Lovely. Sally, you read that one?
No,
me either. That's why we're not doing that.
That's why you're not here.
That's why
you're not invited.
That's why we're not doing it.
Fair enough. Why you're not invited.
I'll get me coat.
Both And Then There Were None and The Great Godden are coming up on the other side of this music.
I can't breathe. Discuss how important this book is in the field of criminal mystery
writing. Michael, stop!
Sorry.
Stop. We weren't recording. We've lost about half an hour of that. So thankfully, I think for the people at home, we have missed all of that. But also, I forgot to do in the intro my sort of little bit of waffle. How are you?
I'm fine.
Overexcited.
Sally, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
A little calmer than Michael.
Yeah, have we all had a good week?
I'm very tired.
Are you?
Yes.
It's been a very short week, because this is an Easter special.
Yeah, of course.
That's why there's three of us as well. That's
of course.
Why.
Yeah,
it's an Easter special.
Holy Trinity?
One of us rose from the dead. I don't know. looks like you.
Thanks.
I was going to say
the night's sleep I had. Yes.
Anyway, we are here to talk about And Then There Were None. Shall I read you the blurb, Michael? Because I don't know if you know what it's about.
Oh, go on then.
10 strangers are invited to Soldier Island, an isolated rock off the Devon coast. Cut off from the mainland, with their generous host mysteriously absent, they are each accused of a terrible crime. Then one of the party dies suddenly, and they realise there may be a murderer in their midst, a murderer who might strike again and again. And all the time, copies of a macabre nursery rhyme hang in each room, a nursery rhyme with an omen of death for all 10 of them. So, Sally, what did you think?
Well, I haven't read any Agatha Christie up until this point.
Is this your first?
Heathen.
It is. I've been called worse. And like you, if it had won the Christie Off.
The Christie Off.
I can remember what you called it.
The World Cup of Christie. The Agathon.
Agathon, there you go.
Whichever one I'd said I was going to read. You'd also said the same thing. We didn't meet and discuss
that,
this.
No.
It just happened that way. And so, so I got a copy. I made a big song and dance to make sure Michael saw it was on the blackboard and what I was reading.
Yeah, yes. which I think was brave.
Do you think
considering,
so?
Considering, you know, if you'd hated it...
I wouldn't have told him that.
No, exactly.
Wouldn't dare.
But he would have asked.
No, I didn't.
Did you hate it?
No, I didn't. I really, really enjoyed it, actually.
Did
good.
Did you know anything about it going into it?
Not a thing. No.
You hadn't seen any adaptation?
No.
They do seen versions of it.
I've seen the Charles Dance version of it a few years ago.
It was the BBC Christmas a couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, but in the same way that... I mean, we went to see... Me and Michael went to see The Mousetrap last week.
Yeah, I've been on a high all week.
And I've seen that before.
That's why you're exhausted.
But I also went along with that knowing absolutely nothing about it because I'd completely forgotten.
Okay.
And the same with... All I knew about the Charles Dance adaptation of And Then There Were None was that Charles Dance was in it.
Right.
That's all I could remember.
Yeah.
I don't know what I think.
Really?
Yeah.
It's controversial.
Like, if this is the best one, I'm not going to read any of the others.
Okay, so I'm going to make my points now. Because you said this to me the other day, and I just want to make it clear, Agatha Christie is not held up in, you know, over however many years after her death as the greatest writer in the field because of her technical ability to write, or because of her 3D characters, or because of her sparkling dialogue. She is held up because the plots are tight as you like. And it is so beautifully done, this book. And I think, I know you were saying there's not much fluff in between. It is just like, here's what you need to know, and then we get on with it.
If you had a roast dinner with gorgeous roast potatoes,
yes,
but rubbish beef,
yes,
rubbish Yorkshire puddings, and really watery, horrible gravy, would you say that was a good dinner?
I would argue that none of that is bad enough in here. I fully accept people do kind of go, you know, she's simplistic and her characters are not always 3D. But I don't always agree with that. And I think in this case, there is enough information in there that you need. It's a big cast as well.
Oh, God, right? Yeah. It's 10 of them. It's a big cast.
And so there isn't time to get on with everything else, and that helps add to the tension.
I do think I'm being slightly unfair with the roast dinner analogy.
You are. You're just doing it to wind me up.
I am slightly. But I do think actually what he does do well, plotting. Yes, that was very well done in this. I do think actually what she takes this large cast and she balances it well with fairly limited biographical information about any of them that you can still work out. Which one's which?
Yeah.
They're all quite distinct, even though you don't really know anything about them.
No, true.
Which I think is quite a good
trick.
I think if she'd maybe just written distinct characters, she wouldn't have to rely on whatever trick she did.
True. I think that's the thing. A lot of them have quite big casts by necessity, because they are meant to be...
Mysteries,
and here's a lot of people who could have done it. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, if you want a small... Like, Cards on the Table is 4 suspects, and that is it.
I mean, also, as well, there's only 250 pages.
Yes, and they're really short.
That's a death every 25 pages.
Yes, yes.
So that's...
What's not to love?
So, I think, I mean, if we're talking to anyone who's never read And Then There Were None...
Yes.
There is a lot of... There's a lot of dialogue.
Yes.
It bounces from dialogue to dialogue with very little sort of... prose in between that describes what's going on. There's not very much, and then the prose that is there is quite sparse. It's largely a dialogue-y book, I think. And I actually think she does the dialogue quite well. You said she doesn't write the most sparkling dialogue. I think she does it quite well.
I think she does good dialogue, but I'm saying people generally kind of go, that's not... So we don't hold her up as going, the dialogue is perfect. Like someone like... Who does really good dialogue? David Nichols, for example, does really good dialogue and character. So I think he's more for that. And if you want proper world building, you go to Jasper Ford. If you want plot, you go here.
Yeah. So I also think when I finished this, when I finished this novel, I thought, what a great playwright she is. I don't know if that's a compliment to a novel writer.
No, it absolutely is, because she was a massive playwright as well.
I mean, obviously she was a playwright.
Yes.
But... If you're trying to write a novel and you've got them away people thinking that's a great play,
yes.
I don't know if you've succeeded.
That's true. It was adapted for stage as well. I have seen it on stage.
And what was it like on stage?
Really good. It does work really, really well. Very dark.
Is it very different?
Nope. It's pretty much as is, but it's all obviously done in one room. There's not much moving about of everything. But yeah, it really ramps up the claustrophobia of the whole thing. Because on this, you are just on an island.
Yeah.
In that, you're in a room.
Mm. Yeah.
And people are going to start dying.
How does this stack up with other Agathas? I know you're saying it's the best, but in comparison, are they all like this?
No, this is something... I don't know what this is. This is something very special, I think. It's the one that she was proudest of and spent the most time plotting.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of that with it. She knew what she was doing. And they're all similar because they're all of a formula. But I also think it is... Like I said, it's something special. It's something very different. And just cannot be faulted. There is a reason it is something like the 6th best-selling novel of all time. So, you know, it must be doing something right.
Yeah, yeah.
And hasn't put people off for the last 90 years, I think. It's coming up to that. I think it's 1939 this one came out.
If somebody hadn't read Agatha Christie before,
is this the one you'd say read?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because like you two have both read this because you knew it was the favourite one.
Well, you don't want to give them the favourite. No, exactly. You don't want to give people the best one.
No, and that's the trouble, is that you don't want to start with the best one, because then they go, well, there's no point doing the others. But going back to like your beef analogy, for example, this is a 10 out of 10, you know, grade
prime rib
thing. But a lot of the others are still 9.5, 9. You know, they are...
They're a nice cheeseburger. Yeah, yeah,
absolutely, yes. You know, but they're really good steaks still. And some of them are a bit cheeseburgers and some of them are a McDonald's Happy Meal. But, you know, a lot of them are really, really good. And I think this is... If you really want to see what she's capable of, this is the one to start with.
Right.
And then go back to the other ones. Because also there's no... None of her recurring detectives are in this one either.
Yeah.
So it's a complete standalone. And, yeah, so I think it is a good place to start. But... And I also don't think you have to go into this and go, well, nothing else is going to be ever as good. Because everyone has their own favourite one.
Yeah.
This isn't everybody's favourite
one. Is it your favourite?
It sort of is, yes. I never say that it is, but it probably is, just for the technical ability of it, yeah.
Sally?
Yeah.
What did you think, as your sort of entry into Agatha, as it were? Oh, that doesn't sound
that
right, does it?
That doesn't sound right at all, but...
Did you hear that, listeners? That was Michael, shut up.
It was... You say that there's dialogue, but not much prose, and... I found that refreshing. Literally beforehand, I just finished 11/22/63, Stephen King, and that could have done with
a
big edit. That was a lot going on. There was a lot of additional information, and it was quite wearing. It was a brilliant book, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. But it was, oh.
I mean, this was pacey.
Very pacey, but really, it just, I've read it twice now. Just like,
yay. Why?
Because... You can read it in an afternoon. I read it this afternoon before I came up here.
Just to refresh
yourself.
Just, well,
I'm with the master. I didn't want to make myself look...
Thanks.
Oh, I thought you meant me.
No. The Agatha master. I didn't want to let anyone down. So I've read it again, and it is as good again.
Did you see anything new out of it the second time?
Michael did say if you read it again, you do start to see the clues, and I'll be honest, I didn't. But I was speed reading
again,
it because I was
this is one of the ones where the clues are very well hidden.
Yes.
I've already forgotten what happened.
I'm not going to say on air.
But I love the pace. I love the fact these people don't have just accepted an invitation to go. They don't really know who it's come from. That was quite funny.
They might
know, but
they're not
sure.
You've got this woman at the beginning, and she's like, "Oh, that. Oh, yes, I met her on holiday.
Some years ago, I think it was in a guest house. Well, oh yes, I'll go and stay with her.
Well, exactly. Yes, but that again ties into the 1930s. The class.
That was what life was.
You
like
just went.
Then.
Oh well, yes. I need to be seen in the right places. Therefore, I need to go here.
Yeah.
The thing that really makes me laugh is the person who issues the invite to all of them is called UN Owen,
which is
unknown.
Unknown. Yes.
And none of them seem to clock that.
No. No.
Do they don't even mention that in the book, do they?
Oh, they do.
I think they do later go, yeah. Oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, yeah.
When they all start producing their letters. I think this is after the first day.
Yes, because they're all, then all the notes have like different, the U and the N stand
yes,
for different things.
You know, something going or the other one.
Yeah.
But
did you clock who it was? Well, either of you.
I guess. I knew who it was. I knew that.
The second time?
No, the first time.
And
no,
were you right?
No.
Okay.
Of course I wasn't.
No, I was wrong as well when I first read this one. It was one that I'd somehow managed to never find out the secret before I read it.
Yeah.
And I was wrong.
So I don't... And you might be different, Sally. I don't know. But when I go into a sort of murder mystery or a whodunit or a crime or whatever, I don't sit there and try and work out who did it.
No.
I'm there to go along with the ride.
Yeah.
I don't go, oh, there's a clue.
No.
I often go, oh, they want me to think it's this person, because at that point... That's it, and that's kind of as far as I go. Oh, like at the moment, they want me to think.
No,
it's,
I don't go in trying to solve it the minute I start reading it. Like
do you, Michael?
No, not really. But also, the first time I read them all, so the 66 novels, the first time I read them all, I think I was correct 1.5 times.
What?
The one where I completely got the solution, and one where I got half the solution.
Oh, okay.
But yes, I'm no good. And even now, rereading them, I'm picking up and going, yes, I have no idea what happens in this
book.
But do you
try and work it out?
Sometimes, yes. I think once you've read a lot of this sort of genre as well, you see what they're directing you at. Like you've said before, you kind of go, oh, I can see I'm meant to think this.
Yes.
So, you know, like, so yes, you can definitely see what they're doing. And it's just trying to remember then which is which and stuff. But sometimes there is something thrown in so throwaway that you don't really notice it. Yeah. And then as you go, oh, they did say that, but I was paying attention to something else, you know.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant one in, I can't remember which book it's in, but there's a whole clue that's built on the butler in the house is looking at a calendar. And he's looking really intently at this calendar. And you're meant to go, I need to focus on the date. And actually the clue is, the butler is really short-sighted and can't see.
Ah.
So therefore you can't trust what he's been claiming he saw earlier.
That's clever.
Yeah, so it's very, you know, clever how she throws in these things.
Yeah.
I've completely forgotten what I was going to ask now.
A sequel, no.
No, you've put me right off. So say something else while I think about it.
The other thing in this is one of her other examples of using nursery rhymes to be creepy. So again, seeing the mousetrap this week, the motif of three blind mice recurs and they sing that as a whole thing.
Yeah.
This is obviously based on the poem 10 Little Soldiers.
Yes. Yeah.
As it is now.
As it's in all the bedrooms, yeah.
Yes, exactly. But she's done other ones. There's Pocket for the Rye. There's actually one called Sing a Song of Sixpence, A Pocket for the Rye, and A 4 and 20 Blackbirds.
Oh, okay.
There's Five Little Pigs. There's Crooked House.
Hickory Dickory Dock.
There are a lot based on slightly macabre nursery rhymes. It was one of her things to do.
Oh, I said to you that when I was talking to you after I'd read it,
and
you were saying about it being a playwright, you can see she's a playwright. As I said to you, Michael, that as I was reading it, I'm thinking, this would work really well on screen, I think, or not realising it's already been on screen on stage, because that's how much I know about Agatha Christie. And Michael said, hey, it's on iPlayer.
Yeah.
So I've watched.
Yeah, so have you watched it?
I've watched one episode on iPlayer. There's three episodes.
Okay.
I've watched the first one.
What do you think so far of the adaptation of it?
I'm pleased with it.
This is Charles Dance.
It's it's fairly true to the book.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. I remembered what I was going to ask.
Yes.
So you were saying about the clues. Now you've told me before with Agatha, what she tends to do is write the story, get to the end, work out who's most likely to have done it, and then pepper back in some clues.
Yes.
Is that what she did with this? Do
no,
we know?
No, this one was completely and utterly plotted from the ground up.
So she knew starting this, it's X.
I think so, whether it was halfway through she realised, but it wasn't at the end of it a whim of, oh, we were going to make this.
Mm.
This was one she knew what she was doing. Yes, I have a book that is like her notebooks, because of course I do.
Did you steal them?
No. They published them all a few years ago.
Okay.
But only it took about 40 years to do, because her handwriting is so atrocious. It took 40 years to translate everything that was written down.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of notes.
I mean, you can tell that just from her signature, which is on the front of all of her books. That Christie does not look like Christie.
No. It's a good big signature.
It looks like Keyes tie.
Yeah, something like.
I did struggle with the language a little bit to start with, because it's very, well, obviously it's very old-fashioned. It's
well, yeah,
back in
there's definitely bits like that,
it?
Yeah.
And it did, I was getting a hint of Lashins of Lemonade, but Enid Blyton, but that's the same era isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just had to, that was the only thing I thought, it's all a bit jolly hockey sticks, but then I settled into it and it was absolutely fine.
That's one of the other things I found with her as well, is that people associate her with the 20s and 30s, and where I'm reading them in order now, I've just reached 1960.
Oh, right.
And so characters have started turning up wearing jeans.
Yes.
You know, they mentioned Joyce Grenfell.
You mentioned the Beatles in a second.
Yeah, you will.
I wasn't going to.
No,
I haven't got to that point yet. But it'll come. You could see, as it, going read them in order, you can see how society has changed and shifted as you go on as well. Because this is just pre-war.
Yeah.
I think, usually, it opens by saying, it's 1939.
Yeah, so this is the thing. It doesn't actually say it on the... It's not even in the book. So it's not the book. And it doesn't say it on the back of this book, but on the online blurb, it says 1939, Britain's pre-war. And I sort of was like, okay, but why? What that has absolutely no bearing.
No,
the fact that Britain is about to go to war has no bearing on this plot.
No.
And so it was an interesting thing for me about blurbs and why they put in what they put in. And I think there is a bit of a... just by saying 1930s pre-war, you've got a picture in your head of the type of people that you're seeing.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a really... I don't know if it's a lazy thing or a clever thing of the publisher to do. To basically, because you go into this with zero sort of timing in terms of...
Yeah.
If you didn't know it was 1930s, you wouldn't know it was 1930s. So by telling... the reader on the back that it is 1930s. It helps actually the reader sort of colour in a lot of the gaps that Agatha hasn't.
Yes, yeah.
And I think I think that's one of the good things that you, because I think if this was one that she'd written later and set in the 60s, I don't know that it would work as well. Because one of the reasons this works, or that you can forgive the lack of descriptive and prose and all of that, is that you know exactly when and where this is, because it's an Agatha.
Yeah.
You know it's 1930s, you know it's posh white people.
Yes.
And so you don't really need that much information about them and the setting.
No, yes, that's true. So I'm going to ask you both a question as well.
Okay, well, we're running out of time. We've gone on for nearly 20 minutes.
I know, but I could go on for another 20 hours.
No.
But I'm just going to ask one question each of you. Sally, are you going to read any more?
I am going to read some more, and only a couple of days ago you pressed another one in my
hand.
Yes,
I did. Yes, that's true. Evil Under the Sun.
Ooh.
Yes.
Is that the one that is the only one not set in contemporary times?
No.
Contemporaneously.
Well done. As Death Comes as the End.
Oh, okay.
Alex, will you read any more?
I don't know.
Okay.
I've read a few.
Yes, I know.
It's not my first rodeo with Agatha. Okay. I've read Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes.
Which I remember being quite similar to this in, there were a lot of people and...
Yeah, there's a lot of people in that one as well.
And
yeah.
The sort of prose was lacking.
Yes.
I read...
Mysterious Ferret Stiles.
That's the one. That one was not like this. I actually felt that one had better sort of descriptiveness.
Yeah, that's one more of her classic, you're in a big house.
Yeah, and I liked that one. So I'm not put off reading her.
Good.
Like, this was perfectly fine. I'm not in a rush to read any more. There's a couple that I think maybe I'd like to read a Miss Marple.
Yes.
Mm. Because I've just not read a Miss Marple.
I'm not getting the Miss Marples.
Oh, that's great.
No, you're not.
As it were.
Again, I'll point you.
If you do get the Miss Marples, go and see the doctor.
I'll point you to the best ones as well.
You've mentioned a couple that are... You think quite like is it Seven Dials Mystery?
Yeah, that's not her. That's a standalone again, but that's really good.
Yeah, you've mentioned
but it's
that
more
one.
More of a thriller that one than a murder mystery.
Yeah, so you've mentioned that one, and I was sort of intrigued by that. There's a couple that I see every now and then that I'm like, oh, I think I'd like to read that.
Yeah.
So at some point, maybe I will read another one, but I'm not rushing
that's
to it.
Fine. That's
fine. I think three in 10, 15 years is plenty.
That's fine.
Maybe in another one in a few years' time. Mm.
No, I'd certainly read some more.
Good.
Well, you're drawing me up with your top 10.
Well, Sally.
Well.
What you need.
Oh, I know what I need.
Yeah.
The Agatha Christie subscription.
I know. Just do that.
You can go to burtsbooks.co.uk and sign up and get 20% off using the code WELCOME20.
WELCOME20.
Very nice.
And if you don't want to subscribe, Sally, all of the others are there. All of the Agathas are there. You can buy them, order them online, and you can also get, if you want to buy another copy of And Then There Were None, you can order that at burtsbooks.co.uk as well.
You can.
It's amazing.
Yes. Right, Michael, that's enough.
Okay.
We're done. This is the bit where I normally say it's time for my favourite part of the week, but as soon as I finish this, I'm off to have a bacon sandwich. So it's time for my second favourite part of the week. And that is, of course, the bestseller charts. We're going to start this week with the top 10 books that are sold in the country. We do this using Nielsen Bookscan's total consumer market data. And we are, of course, still excluding the World Book Day books, although most of them are no longer inside the top 10. We are going to start at number 10 with The Dinosaur That Pooped Easter by Dougie Pointer and Tom Fletcher. Not our first Easter book this week, but it is up 6 places. Down 2 places, there's A Little Chick in Your Book. Again, Tom Fletcher. He really is trying to corner the market with Easter. At number 8, down 2 places, we've got another Easter book. This time it's Bluey. Hooray, it's Easter. At 7, up 5 places, we've got James Patterson's new book, Private Rome. We are going on an egg hunt. That's Martha Mumford, down 2 places to 6. A Tempest of Tea by Hafsa Faisal is new in at 5. Down 2 places to number 4, it's Lisa Jewell with None of This Is True. At 3, last week's number 3, Anne Cleves with The Raging Storm. And a new entry in at number 2, it's Dav Pilkey, the 12th Dogman novel, The Scarlet Shedder. And at number 1, no move for Lee Child and Andrew Child with The Secret. This is number 28 in the Jack Reacher series. So, that was a good rundown of the top 10. I think next week we'll see a few more Easter books. So we're always like a week behind with the data. But a lot of new releases. We had books from Stuart Turton, Sarah Cox, C.L. Taylor, Adele Parks. I think the Adele Parks one, because it's a paperback, will do quite well. The others, we don't tend to see that many hardbacks inside the top 10, but maybe one or two of them might make it up. We will find out next week. But now, before we go, we need to look at the top 5 books that have been selling in Burt's Books. We start at number 5 with In Memoriam, which is now on its 4th week on the pillar of popularity. At number 4, it's Every Move You Make by C.L. Taylor, thanks to our event with her last Saturday. We've got signed copies in the shop and they are still continuing to sell. Way Back by Sarah Cox. We sold quite a few of those in the shop this week. That's at number 3 this week. Number 2, this one, Old Babes in the Wood, Margaret Atwood, 2nd week on the chart. Doing really well for a paperback. It's not in our book club, we haven't got signed copies, and yet it's still rocking up there towards the top. But nothing can beat our number 1 this week. It is Adele Parks with Just Between Us. We sold a massive amount of these at our event last Sunday. It puts us straight in to number 1. What will be number 1 next week? Well, there is only one way to find out, and that is by listening to the Burt's Books podcast. Right, we have got a gay book club book.
We do.
The Great Gordon, and I've got off the chair, so I'm not creaking and squeaking anymore. go on, tell us about The Great Gordon, Nikki.
Well, this was one of our choices for gay book club, and I will just read you the synopsis first. This is the story of one family, one dreamy summer, the summer when everything changes. In a sun-drenched house by the sea, teenage brothers and sisters and older cousins fill the golden days with wine and games and planning a wedding. Enter the Goddens, irresistible, charming Kit and surly, silent Hugo. Suddenly there's a serpent in paradise, and the consequences will be devastating. I must say, this is, just for the point of reference, it is a bit of a YA book.
Young adult.
Yep. And I, in my job, I have started to read more YA. This is not one I'd read yet.
Now, let's tell people what you do as a job.
Oh, yes.
Because that doesn't really make sense.
Sorry.
She's a police officer.
I'm arresting those young rogues. No, I am a secondary school librarian.
So, dream job.
It is a great dream job. I love it. I would love to say, like working in a bookshop, you get to sit around all day and read books.
Yeah, of course you do.
Yeah.
Not. No.
Not at all. So I was really pleased this came up because it is YA, but it is also part of Gay Book Club book. This book, it's half and half. I really love it.
Okay.
Love it. There's a structural part of it that I find fascinating. And I think that's why I love it so much. As a book...
It's very hard to talk about
it. It's really hard without spoilers.
Do you think we should do a spoiler on that one bit?
All right. I think if we do a spoiler, but give people the option to listen.
Okay. So,
zone out.
So, spoiler warning. And if I remember, I'll do this in the intro of the episode as well.
Yes.
Spoiler... fast forward or stop listening to this bit on The Great Gordon, because I think it might come up throughout.
Yes.
Basically, the main character of The Great Gordon, we do not know their name, their gender...
Or their age.
Or their age, really.
No, we don't at all. And I love that fact. It was really, really, probably one of the most interesting books I've read in a long time. YA... I was a bit disappointed. The characters, they're a bit all two-dimensional.
Yeah.
You don't get to know them very well. But the main character, the whole story is told from the main character's point of view.
So it's first person, which helps the whole disguising gender
exactly.
stuff, etc.
And so it's told from the main protagonist's point of view. Obviously, they... No, spoiler, they fall in love with one of the brothers that come visiting, but they are not the only one.
No.
Everyone
falls for Kit Godden.
Exactly. And
he causes havoc amongst the family.
It is, and it is that serpent in paradise. But I struggled with that because I couldn't see why everyone fell in love with Kit. Kit as a character, when you read him, very two-dimensional, didn't understand what everyone sees in him. Because literally all the characters fall in love with Kit in one way or another. And yeah, I really struggled with that. You didn't know why. And some of the other characters, you just didn't know why. You know, maybe because you don't get an insight into them and how they're thinking and feeling. I don't know. But the reason I did love it is because of this whole, you do not know whether the main protagonist is male, female, or how old they are.
Were you one of the people who noticed?
I was. This is another thing that fascinated me about it.
Yeah. I've been wanting to do this in the book club for years.
I know. I absolutely loved it. Because bit of context. I was out for the day with Julianne.
Yeah.
And we'd stopped off in a pub and she'd said, oh, bring a book so we can stop and have a little read. And I started reading it in the pub. And I'd only read a few chapters. I think I was on chapter 9. And Julianne sort of turned and said, what do you think? And I was like, well.
Had Julianne read it by that point?
Julianne had read it by that point. And I straight away was like, well, I find it fascinating because you don't know if it's a boy or a girl and you don't know their name and how old they are. And she was like, yes, and you never do. I was like, oh my God, I have to finish off reading this now.
But there were some people at book club who, when I revealed it, I said, so who noticed that we didn't find their gender? There was a people who went, huh.
Pardon?
Didn't know. Didn't clock that.
Yeah.
Like, and I think when I read it, I went into it. Because did you spot it fairly quickly?
I spotted it really quickly.
So I think I must have been around about chapter 9. It wasn't that far into it when I spotted it. But I suddenly thought, they said something which didn't quite fit with the image of them I'd created of them in my head. And I had assumed it was a girl.
See, this is weird. This is what I loved as well, because I spotted it right from the start, so I just went with the they, them, and kind of tried to go, you know, down the middle road.
Well, so so...
But when we discussed it in group and that came out, it was fascinating how many thought, oh, I just read it as a girl the whole way through. Some were like, oh no, I read it as a boy the whole way through. And then there was one or two that said,
I thought it was a girl, then it was a boy.
And it kept chopping and changing depending on what was happening.
So we were saying earlier, off of recording, about how a book is shaped by the reader, right?
Yes.
Now, I read this when it first came out, 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, I said to people at the time, this is maybe my book of the year, because this whole construct and the way... I sometimes, when I pick my book of the year, it's not because of... It's a book that stayed with me.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the book I enjoyed the most, or that there was something about it that I really thought was clever or interesting. And for me, The Great Godden, the way it did that and played with the reader's expectations really made me think.
That is what makes me love it so much.
And like I said, I thought it was a girl, and then I changed my mind and thought it was a boy, and then I think I changed my mind a few times when I read it that first time. And then reading it now, I've changed. The world around has changed. And I'm much more familiar with non-binary people and trans people. It's a world that I have come to understand better since having read the first time. And so this time I read it and I thought, no, I went into it knowing that you didn't know.
That you didn't know, yeah.
And I thought, well, this will be interesting because I wonder if I'll pick up on different clues or things. And then as I was reading it, I thought, it doesn't matter.
No.
Like, it doesn't matter whether it's a boy or a girl or how they present. I was able to enjoy it as a story.
Yeah.
And actually, this time, there were bits in it that I thought, oh, okay, this actually is a trans character or is a non-binary character. It isn't a boy and it isn't a girl. It's somebody who has decided to identify, or not decided, but who does identify as non-binary. And there's a really telling line from Kit in this book, which I think indicates that. And it's something I missed the first time. But he says to this character, when they're asking about how, you know, you've been off with this girl, you've been off here and you've done this. And Kit says, but you intrigue me. I have questions.
Yes.
And for me, Kit was, I mean, no spoiler, Kit sleeps with guys, he sleeps with girls. And he doesn't strike me as somebody who has questions.
No.
And then there's this person who is
different.
And that's what Kit
likes.
That's what Kit wants to get to know.
Yeah. And he's intrigued by the differences.
Yeah. So that, I thought, was a big clue as to the gender of the character.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why, like I said, I'm with you. Sometimes you read books and that aren't particularly great, but they've got something about them. And it was this, the way, like I said, with my role working with kids over the years and stuff, I had a fairly decent understanding of the LGBTQ community and things. But in the last few years, like you said, it's really come to the forefront, and joining the LGBT book club and everything has really opened me up and my knowledge. So I think that's why I went with the non-binary from the start, because I was just like, okay, this is what it is. And I was prepared for that. And I just, let's accept that and crack on. And I think that's, but it was, like you said, the way the author handled it, I thought was brilliant. And I loved that discrepancy. And then how, like you said, life experience is what you bring to the book. And seeing, I thought it was really good to talk about. I was dying to talk to people about it.
I have been wanting to do this as a book club pick for years. I've like finding people who've read it because I want to discuss it with them.
Yeah.
And actually, again, discussing it, I got different things out of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to move slightly away from the book now. What did you? How do you find the difference between gay book club and straight book club? Like, do you find that focus? Because so in straight book club, we talk about the book and we talk about anything that happens to pop up. In gay book club, whatever we read, it's always by or about the LGBT community.
Yeah.
But we also like to look at it from an LGBTQ lens.
Yeah.
So was the representation good? What was this good? And sometimes we might talk about different things that we wouldn't necessarily talk about in straight book club. Do you find as somebody who's a member of both, and I mean I lead both, so it's quite difficult for me to see. Do you find that the kind of conversation is different, or is it same?
I think
level of sort of analysis.
Yes, yeah, there's a basic level of analysis in both of them, where, like you said, where we discuss the text and the characterization, and did we like the plot and all the rest of it. That happens in both. I think in straight book club, we probably delve into that a bit more.
Right.
Whereas with LGBTQ one, I like the fact that we then look at representation and was it a fair representation of that person and that their gender and their sexuality and all the rest of it. So it, you know, we look at it through that lens. And I think it's good because, like I said, it's nice to get those different perspectives, and it helps with that empathy of seeing the world from other people. And if you don't understand it, you can bring it up. And the good thing about LGBTQ is nobody's bothered, and any question is not a silly question. You can ask and someone will explain it to you. If you know, if that's not your world, this is a way into your world, into that world, and to understand it. And I like the lens and like representation. I think representation, especially in the jobs that we do, is really important. Everybody wants to see themselves and see themselves reflected back in a book. And I think that is vitally important.
I got to say, I absolutely love reading a really rubbish, trashy love story involving two guys. Because it's just, I've read trashy love stories involving a man and a woman. And it's, that's fine, that's lovely. But like, I wanna have that dream for myself. Yes. It doesn't even have to have a happy ending. Just like, these things can happen.
You want to see yourself. You want to see yourself reflected in what you read. And I think, you know, you have, like, typically most books, unfortunately, are written by straight, white, middle-aged men and women. And it's just nice to see the representation across the board. And obviously, my job in particular, I have to, you know, we've got kids from all backgrounds, from all genders, transitioning, not transitioning, you know, straight, bi, all of them. And I like to see that representation in there. I mean, that's part of the reason to come, so that I can broaden my depth of knowledge in that field.
At some point, so in Straight Book Club in March, we have read, or are reading, depending on when this bit goes out. In Memoriam by Alice Wynne.
Yes, I was surprised. When it came up, I was like, I wasn't sure people would vote for that one. I thought, again, I would have...
So this is,
I would have typically expected to see it in Gay Book Club.
It's a gay love story, but it's in Straight Book Club. And I thought, I'm not going to not put it in, because it was a really good book. And I think there are sort of storytelling techniques in there that I would like to discuss.
Yeah.
But, so the way that, for anyone who's listening, the way that Straight Book Club works is I pick two books and they vote on them. The way that Gay Book Club works is a fairly new development, is that we have a rainbow jar and we put suggestions in there, and then I pick out two a month and we put them to the vote, and then the one that doesn't win goes back into the jar and we may come back to it at a later date, because we were picking two great books every month and then not reading but I've put In Memoriam in the jar. And I'm really interested to pick that one for Gay Book Club.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how
Straight Book Club approaches it and versus Gay Book Club.
Yeah, that I'm really looking forward to that, actually. Because when it came up, I was like, I'm really interested. I really want to read this book, because you'd told me about it before and we sort of talked about it in the shop.
Yeah.
And I was like, yep, good, this is one I want to read. I did vote for that one, I think. And then... when I thought to myself, I'm surprised it hasn't come up in Gay Book Club.
Yeah.
That was my sort of instinct, was why hasn't this come up there?
Well, it's only just come out.
Yeah.
It's in the jar. Yeah. It would have been nice if it had picked out for this month. We could have read them both at the same time. But it will be interesting.
Bonus, when it does come out, I'll have already read it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see
the differences. To see the differences. Like I said, because every book, we all read the same text, but we all take something different from it. So it will be really interesting.
Yeah. We should probably leave it there. We've wanged on enough.
Talk for English.
No, it's fine. I like
about
it.
Books.
The Great Godden by Meg Rozoff. It is available to order. Where, Nikki?
At birdsbooks.co.uk.
You nearly forgot.
I did.
And then I think there's something like Halloween Party, which again was done
and
as a
that thing. Is everything for this week. We have managed to stop Michael from talking too much more about Agatha. We've had Sally here with us as well. We've been talking about And Then There Were None. Mm. And we've also spoken to Nikki about The Great Godden, which I'll just let you two know, I've spoken to everyone else who's listening to this, was one of my favourite books when it was first published. So it was my favourite book of that year. Rereading it, maybe not so much, but I think it's definitely one that, having reread it, I've approached it differently.
I still think
you two should read it, and Sally, it's an afternoon read as well.
It's on the list, I think.
I think you'd both enjoy it, and I would like to know your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But we will leave it there. Also, we've also listened to the charts. We know
they were great, weren't they?
Good, yeah.
We know.
I didn't see that coming.
Oh, yes.
Well, of course you did. We know that Adele Parks is number one.
Yes.
I mean, we sold loads of that.
She'll be number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, won't she? Surely, isn't she? Surely.
Mm. Well, we sold loads on Sunday when she came in for a lovely event.
Yes.
We've got loads of events coming up in the shop. We've got Julio and Moylan next with Stacey Halls.
Oh, yes.
That's on the 10th of April, just the day before both of their books are published. Then we've got Harriet Tice.
Yes.
She's coming in with Sarah Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking about A Lesson in Cruelty and Black Fawn, their new ones. Mm. Then at the end of April, 25th of April, we've got Hayley Stevens and Keith Stewart. They're in on Bert's birthday.
Ooh,
well,
lovely.
A week early, because Heidi's off to Eurovision. But we're celebrating Bert's second birthday of the bookshop.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I believe it's been 2 years nearly.
Two years. Oh, I know.
Amazing. There will be bubbles.
Been nearly a year since Sally joined us.
It has,
That's true.
Yeah.
That's flown by, hasn't it?
That's flown by,
Let's get some cake.
I think
I mean, well, just anyway, generally.
Yeah,
fine.
Fizz and cake.
Fizz and cake. Okay, good. We'll leave it there then.
Okay.
So do remember to visit burtsbooks.co.uk for all your bookish needs. Do email bert@burtsbooks.co.uk. If you want to ask us anything, you can do that there. You can volunteer yourself to be part of the book club, the podcast.
Yeah, save us doing it for a while.
Well, I've got somebody. So next week, one of you two is doing it. I don't know which one yet. But the week after, we've got Keith.
Keith?
Keith.
Keith?
Keith.
Lovely.
Keith's coming.
Goodness me.
Another Methodist minister. Oh. I'm collecting them.
Oh, you okay. Are?
Yeah, so we had Reverend Rachel the other week. We've got Keith. I haven't decided what his moniker might be yet.
Okay.
Need to find something with a K.
I did ask Reverend Rage earlier if there was any Bible words within the cave, which couldn't come up with anything.
Why?
Just to tie in with Keith.
Oh, did you know about Keith already?
She mentioned it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I was like, how did you know? I'm sure I haven't mentioned it. So we've got Keith coming up in a couple of weeks. If you are listening and would like to do a Rach or a Keith or a Dan or a Nikki and join us, you can. You email bert@burtsbooks.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram @burtsbooks. And here's new. We've got a WhatsApp channel.
Oh,
yes, whatever that is.
Don't know.
So that means it's that people can get updates from us, and they don't have to. We don't have to have their number in order to do that. They can just follow us.
Oh.
They don't have to share any of their personal data with us. They just get a message. We can't see who's following us at all.
Wish you'd know my personal data. I keep being called into work.
You do. and one day you'll do something.
Yeah. Hope springs eternal.
You never know. So, yes, find the link to do that is at the top of our Twitter profile.
Yes.
@BurtsBooks on Twitter. You find us there. There's a link at the top in the pinned tweet. You can follow us. You'll get to know all of the signed editions, special editions that we're doing. Because some people were saying that they didn't see it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way to see it. So that one is there. That's on WhatsApp. You can also forward that on to your friends. If you find something, if you get sent something.
If you've got any friends.
If you've got any friends, Michael. No. Sally. Sally,
they're all in the room now.
Sally, your friends would love to hear about all of the different things that we've got going on. So you can just forward
they
that
would,
on.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, we're going to stop it there because we've waffled on. Well, Michael's waffled on far too much. Say goodbye, Sally.
Goodbye, Sally.
Say goodbye, Michael.
Goodbye, Michael.
Oh, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.